I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
IBM calls this a personal computer and says a person can afford it, yet it's over $1,500. Apple says computing is a revolution that can't be missed, but at $1,530, you could miss it. Atari says computers are now within reach. Well, the Commodore 64 has more built-in memory than the others, and it's under $600. So, while everyone else talks about the revolution that's coming, you can experience the revolution that's here.
You could miss it.
You could miss it.
You could miss it.
You could miss it. Hello, greetings, and welcome to Play Retro. I am your host, Scott Johnson, and I'd like to go to line four and ask, how hard is your hat, Mac?
And I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway. And I say, let them load, quoted star, comma, 8, comma, 1, return, run, return, and wait 3 minutes before gaming. You so basic, 2-0.
Oh, man. So basic. Why are you so basic?
Why are you so basic, 2-0?
Yeah, what's Come up on. With that? Why are you so basic? Today's big discussion, of course, Commodore 64, and what we think are the definitive list of top games. They're going to have some differing opinions out there. We are excited to hear your thoughts on what you liked or didn't like. But we've got quite the lineup today. Before we get to all of that, a couple quick things. I had a question for you. What was the last... We were playing a lot of retro games lately, obviously, for the show, every week, filled with it. You're streaming them at night, blah, 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 right? And it got me to thinking...
You know, your day-to-day life, whatever.
It got me to thinking, when is the last... What is the last retro title that you started and finished? Like... Played from the beginning all the way to the end, whatever the end is, credits, whatever, done. What was it? Do you remember?
Wow. I'm thinking really hard. I cannot think of anything. I was trying to think of something like Pac-Man. I went as far as you can go.
As far as you can go.
I've never went in Pac-Man. I can't think of anything because a lot of our retro games don't necessarily, if they're not story driven, like I didn't finish Soul Reaver, which I'm still wanting to do.
Oh yeah, you told me you're gonna try to beat that thing.
Yeah. I still want to, but it just seems like retro games keep coming.
It's almost as bad as modern gaming. There's just something new all the time. But I will now be able to tell and announce to the world I beat a retro game last week. I finished Drill Dozer on the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, look at on the Game Boy. So did you do that through emulation on the Steam or did
all
you do
emulation.
It on
all emulation?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's a game I didn't even know existed until recently. And I was late. I think I talked about it on the show a little bit, but it was a late to the generation game that came out of nowhere. Nintendo published it and it was made by the folks who made, I think, most of the mainline Pokemon games.
Right.
Anyway, it is fantastic, top to bottom. Gets kind of difficult toward the end, but in a good way. And I loved Drill Dozer. So look it up, check it out. Drill Dozer was rad. If you want a game that'll keep you totally hooked and you'll finish,
right?
That might be
Plus,
the one.
Scott, It's got the best name. And it is so great that even Deep Rock Galactic used it as the name of their one of their little dozers.
Yeah, the drill dozer. The drill dozer. Yeah. It's Rock and Stone. I freaking love those guys.
Stone.
That's
so good.
Video game, yeah.
I can't wait for that to become retro so we can talk about it.
You know what that game's good on? The Steam Deck plays that game real good.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
No, get out of here. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, real well. Like, perfectly well. Like as good as anything I played on a computer, I'm playing it on my Steam Deck. It's fantastic. Certified functionality, works wonderfully, multiplayer, voiceover, all of it. It's all good. Bim, bam, boom. But that's also where I played Dildozer.
I knew you would have to. You almost can't help it. It's definitely going to be a Dildozer.
Dildozer. I'm going to start calling people that. You Dildozer. Get away from me, Dildozer.
You Dildozer.
It's a pretty good name.
Stop Dildozing me.
It's a pretty good name. Sounds
Beavis
and Butthead kind of a little bit.
It's definitely a name of a adult product. You know it's got to be. Don't look it up.
Nobody do that. But Drilldozer on GBA, available nowhere unless you'd emulate it. And I loved it, and I beat it, and I felt good about it. So go check that out. Hey, Brian, speaking of old games, the Atari 600 XL. I wonder what that has to do with your life this week.
Oh, hi. So one of our wonderful listeners, Matt, sent me in very short order after talking recently about my experience with my Commodore 64 and my C16 failing on me, made a very generous offer of sending me their childhood Atari 600 XL. Oh. And I am holding it right now. It came very fast. I appreciate it so much, Matt. And I can't wait to fire this guy up. I don't know if you ever saw one of these back in the days, but it runs basic. It runs just like you would expect.
Well, wait, what goes in the cartridge hole? 2600 games or what?
That's what I used to think. And this is what's so great about actually holding this hardware in your hands, because I've seen pictures of this plenty of times before. But if you look at the carts, they're little tiny mini carts. They're smaller, much smaller than the 2600
carts.
That's
about the size of not thickness, but height and width. That's about the same size as a Game Gear game. It's pretty good.
Right. It's Game Gear. It's probably a little thicker than a Game Gear game, but you're not wrong. It's kind of in that area. But I got River Raid. I got the Frogger. Look how cute this Frogger is. It looks like the bigger one, but it's a little tiny format.
Yeah, a little Frogger
right up here in the cart. You got a little Frogger there. Yeah. And I couldn't be more excited about this. Also, it comes with the Pilot programming language, which I'm pretty excited about doing. I don't know if you know, but back in the day, I used to love where I got my programming start. And kind of what I still do today is my day job, is I do programming. And part of that was thanks to learning BASIC. Thanks a lot, Bill Gates, from the Commodore 64 in machines like these. Look at this. I got a Zaxxon, too. Look at that. Ooh,
see?
Is that not sexy?
So, look, there's a Game Gear game about the same size. Not thick. It's obviously thinner.
Right.
But look
at
that.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. But it's about the same size. You're right. It's not far off.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Oh. Continue.
I was going to say, Matt also sent me this little tape drives here. I'm very excited about hitting load in my basic command line and then waiting and then pressing play. Actually, you press play first, right? Or you do? I can't remember which way it goes.
I don't remember.
But you got it.
Yeah. It's a long time.
Oh, yeah, but you got to load it up from the screen, and you hit play on the tape recorder, and it starts your little loading game. If you've ever pulled one of those tapes tape player, it's like
what actually happens? You just get a bunch of weird sounds. Is that what happens?
Yeah.
That's how the PlayStation disc worked.
It sounds like data.
Yeah, it is data. Literally data. That's how track one on all the PlayStation 1 discs worked in your car. It was track one would just make horrible static noise. It was great.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
And it also comes. He also sent some nice little magazines and books and stuff. I get to be an Atari 400, 800, 600 student pilot. I'm pretty excited about all
what
this.
Who did the art on that thing? What cover is that?
I don't know. It's very horrible. It very much reminds me of somebody. I couldn't figure out. It reminds me of Sesame Street stuff. And I don't know if they actually credited the individual, but here inside you get more of the same guy's artwork. And I'll have to take a look at that. It's pretty sweet.
It looks bad.
I like it.
Bad in a good way. Yeah.
I like it's a pilot, and I guess you're the turtle learning how to learn stuff. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're
Thanks
a turtle.
A lot, Atari.
You're like a little turtle shell or turtle head poking out. That's what you are.
Oh, and by the way, if you've ever been curious what happens when we get donations, first of all, thank you guys, everybody who donated equipment to the Play Retro museum of sorts. I always, when I get these things, I clean them up real quick, mm-hmm. and then I stick them in these nice little containers to keep any moisture and stuff off of them. And I usually just pick these up. These little stir lights. I think this is like a 32 quart. I usually like to put something this big in these larger boxes.
Yeah,
they keep
cheap.
Them all safe
really
and
cheap.
Dry. And so
you just get those at Walmart, right? Stuff. Buy a whole stack of 10 of them at Walmart for like $12
yeah.
or something. Yeah,
you can get them at Walmart. Amazon's a little more expensive for some reason. I don't know if Sterilite has like a major deal with them. There's probably other brands too, but I found good lids, and I like the fact that they're clear so I can see what's in them so I can quickly get to them. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Cataloging it.
Nice. Yes. That's how you should do it. Take care of your stuff. Yes.
I didn't mention also Matt was nice enough. Also has been listening. Obviously been listening. Thank you, Matt. Sent me a Raspberry Pi 4.
Oh, a Raspberry Pi 4. What are you going to do with that? You're going to load that up and go for some kind of Retro Pi business or what? What are you
I am. I have an old Retro Pi 3, but this new one I'm going to be able to put in my new case that I've been looking desperately for Raspberry Pi 4. Now I have it for my case. It is a Famicom look-alike, so it looks like a little Famicom mini, and I'm gonna probably load up some Famicom games on it. So I'm pretty
the chip
excited.
Shortage is looking good, way more. In fact, there might be a glut coming, so I think those fours are going to be a little more easy to get coming the next few months. So watch for
I don't
that.
Know there's such a backlog because I was looking and I have my name on the list for I think I've been on the list for about maybe 8 months or so because I started looking at the
it's coming
maybe
though.
It was even longer than that.
It's
I started looking into last year, so
you'll get it. The all of the major chip manufacturers are like, oh, slow down, we got a glut coming. Everybody, chill for a second. Yeah. We know we have a shortage, but now we're gonna have a glut, so don't make so many.
I'm feeling pretty good about my two pre-orders. I ordered the Genesis Mini 2, which is the Mega Drive 2.
You have the Japanese one though, right?
I ordered the one from the Japanese Amazon store, pre-ordered it, and I also ordered one when they released the Japanese. All the Sega Genesis are being manufactured in Japan and being shipped from Japan. So I ordered it from the American store as well, Amazon, but it is coming from Japan as well. But it will be branded a little bit differently, so I'm going to get both of those. And I'm glad I did pre-order them because there's been recent talk about it really being in limited supply, which we kind of suspected, but
yeah,
it's official now. So
105 23 is what you're gonna pay here for this.
Yeah, I think I paid 120 something after shipping from the Amazon store, and I think I paid just about that on the US store, free shipping, but it was a little higher. So yeah.
Wow. If you want it on November 1st, you're gonna pay 21 extra bucks.
I think that's what I paid because I wanted it as quick as I could get it.
Oh, man. I need to put this on my – at the very least, I need to get it on my freaking wish list. Things are a little tight at the moment, so I can't buy it right out. But I'm going to hit wish
list. Well, if you pre-order from Amazon, you don't pay for it until it ships. I mean, of course, that's also got to consider. Will you have the money then? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
well,
you,
I'll have it. Yeah. It's just a matter of priorities. I got to figure it out.
Yeah,
I don't know yet.
Well, I mean,
do want
when
it,
I
though.
Say have the money, I mean your Play Retro budget money.
Yeah,
that's what we do. That's how we buy all this stuff is from our patron supporters and people who send us stuff. So
yeah,
that's how we afford it.
The six button controller is something I really want on that thing. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, yeah. Super excited.
Well, anyway, a lot going on, but it's time for us to dig deep into C64 territory. And we do that by starting with this.
Shall we play a game?
Sure, why not? Why don't we play a few games? So there's a gigantic library of games for the Commodore 64. It's kind of unending, this list. It's huge.
Yes.
And there's a huge bunch of garbage games for it. Terrible, awful, buy it on a 5 1/4 inch floppy, garbage poo-poo game. Those exist in large amounts, okay? That's how it was back then. If you had an Apple II, Apple IIe, you had a Commodore, you had early Amiga, you had, you know, Atari stuff. There were a lot of trash, garbage, poo-poo games in the early days.
And that helped the video game crash that came pretty early on. I mean, when you think about 40 years of Commodore 64, it was in 1982 when it started. And by the time we were in 1984, we were already seeing, you know, pretty much the crash. So, yeah the glut of games.
We were there. And there was no getting around, you know, the glut.
Quality
the glut happened.
Control.
Yeah. The glut happened, but also good stuff happened. Things happened, games were made, and we went, oh, okay, this is cool. I'll think fondly on this in 38 years, however. What's it been, 40?
40 years, my friend. 2022 came out in 1982.
That's crazy. That's just
I know. I love it.
How was that 40 years ago?
Seriously. The Commodore 64 is now middle aged. It has hit the hill and it is heading down, baby. Yeah.
It's got weird aches it can't explain. It doesn't know what to do about any of this. So the Commodore 64 was a big deal at the time. These are our top picks that we're going to talk about today. All right.
Yeah, not your top picks. I've heard from plenty of people. I want to hear after the show too. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com or just hit us up on Twitter, PlayRetroShow. We definitely want to hear your top picks. It's not going to be the last time this is not the definitive Commodore 64 top five pick of all time. This is our top pick.
Yeah.
And I want to hear yours.
Yes.
And
now, so everybody and their dog said, you got to have Turrican on here. And they're right.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah. You need Turrican on here. I really like Turrican. I think Turrican's awesome. My only problem with Turrican is it's hard to play it now.
it's balls hard then and is still balls hard now.
Yeah, really hard, but not just balls hard, like balls are falling off and are, you know, corroding hard. It's hard. And it also just like some of the like scrolling technology they were using at the time to have the screen scroll, which at the time, very impressive. Today just feels wonky. It's hard to explain.
Well, we're talking about 8-bit computing. And this was 1990 when Turrican came out. It was a Contra meets Gunstar Hero kind of hard, where you're running and gunning, side-scrolling, and trying to avoid many, many enemies. And it's very floaty. But it's kind of like you're supposed to be in space or like a planet with different gravity. So you can kind of like spell it away. Kind of go, oh, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just different gravity. But I'm with you. It's very floaty, mm-hmm. and there's a little bit of there's a lot, not just a little bit. You know, Nintendo discovered early on, they're like, oh, with the 3D stuff that we're doing, when they got to the N64, mm-hmm. they started cheating mm-hmm. for the user because to try to jump from one point to the next, mm-hmm. people are failing a lot when you use real physics. So they had to like kind of go, okay, close enough, we'll pull you over.
Yeah.
This does the same thing. It will, if you get close enough to an edge of something, it'll pull you over. And so it makes it feel real floaty and inconsistent.
Yeah, it just feels like to me. I played a bunch of this week, and it just felt like I don't know. I felt like I was playing in changing gravity, not low gravity, but gravity that was constantly fluctuating, and it drove me nuts.
That's the pulling.
Yeah,
that's the pulling effect that's happening. That's trying to get you to because the platforming is pretty brutal in itself. But it's not meant to be the part that's hard. The part that's hard is the ongoing onslaught of enemies who are coming at you and just the damage they can create. I can totally see that. But once I got into the groove and set myself back to it, because Turrican's one of those games where you got to if you can get through 15 minutes of it, you'll adjust, you'll acclimate. And then you'll start having fun. But yeah, picking it up right away, even back in the day, it was the same thing. I mean, a lot of players would pick it up and go,
Well, you know what converted a lot of people right away is this. Listen to this amazing intro. Check this out.
Hello and welcome to Turrican. Be my guest. Another day, another try. But remember, shoot or die.
I mean, that's just epic and awesome.
Look, listen to the SID chip in that Commodore 64. That was
even the gameplay. Listen.
Yeah.
It's so much. There was so much going on here that I would say, I don't know, make consoles sound like garbage. Like it was really advanced. Did. Yeah.
It's super advanced. You got to remember, this is the same chip that was in from, day one shipping. This wasn't like in 1999. Like in 1990, you got like an upgrade or something. This was hardware that was there from the beginning. It's called the SID chip, and it was designed to sound more like keyboards. You know, it was musical in design. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, can we make some beeps and boops? They wanted something that sounded like a synthesizer.
Yeah.
They did it.
Yeah, they did. And they did it early, and it hung around forever, and it still rivaled other stuff on the market that came out way later, it was amazing. Like, I, you know, like the Genesis chip had no right to be as shitty sounding as it was. they had time.
It really is not good.
No, it's bad. They could have really, I don't know, this thing just proved a lot. And at the time, I remember them saying, well, it's because it's a computer. It's much more hardware than your average, you know, console the size of a handheld or whatever. But when you introduce your game, the very first effing thing you hear is this. That guy going, bruh, gonna get my freaking shooter die, bruh. I mean, it made my day.
Dude, this is 1990 when this came out, and most of us were probably running our Commodore 64s on our TVs. And this is the CRT era, and it was near the end of the CRT era, and well, not really.
Not really.
It was at the height. It was probably
the height. That's fair.
And so you had some of the best speakers in these big boxes because they just sounded so good. Yeah. And so, man, you put those two things together. I mean, you were blowing people's pants off.
Yeah. What'd you think of the weird little laser weapon that was almost impossible to control?
Right. Okay. So you got your power-ups in Turrican. That's a huge big up for this game.
Yeah.
And so you have to know how to get everything working. And one of the things you do, you got a pistol, a laser that you just can shoot. But if you hold it down long enough, you get this Castlevania style whip thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you remember the whip in Castlevania? I forget which one it was, but the whichever one it is that you can whip it around and stuff. You kind of get that effect where you can circle around yourself with like a clock hand.
Third one. What was it called? Sequel. What's his name's Simon's Quest? I think that had
Castlevania 4. I knew Tondagosa would know.
Did he know?
Castlevania.
Okay. Well, 4 was no, it was called Super shit. Where did that end up? Where was that game?
That's a good question.
I don't remember.
But I'll tell you what. Let me tell you what I did do. This tell is how what. I played this game.
Yeah.
This week.
Oh.
I played it with my Commodore 64 Mini. The controller that came with it, which was, you know, it was a fairly popular controller style back in the day when the Commodore 64 was out. I didn't play very much Turrican back in the day. Once again, I was not into hardcore games. I wasn't into that kind of thing back then, except at the arcade. I liked my physicality of the games at the arcade, but when I was at home, I just wanted to chill out. Mm. And so this was not one that I played very much of. I was aware of it, but I didn't play very much of it.
So side note, my dad, like you said, you had a Commodore 64. In my household, we had an Apple IIe. Those were kind of your two big choices for home computers at the time, or a couple of them anyway, that were popular. Yeah. Anyway, that version of, or that device had a lot of great games on it, many of which were also on the Commodore, but the versions on the 64 were so much cooler, sounded so much better. Like, it was just superior hardware in every way, for games anyway. But here's the other problem. It wouldn't have mattered if I had a C64 because my dad was weird about it. He would say, okay, we're buying these joysticks, but don't use them. They'll wear them out. I'm like, well, Dad.
No, that's hilarious.
Why get joysticks if we're just going to wear them out? Well, that's how, you know, don't use that computer too much either. You're just going to wear that keyboard. Don't wear that keyboard out. Like, Dad, you have to use the keyboard to type stuff. I know, but don't use it too much. Like,
you use it too much. Stop hitting the keys.
How much is a replacement keyboard? Was it $4,000 or something? Because my gosh, he was so cheap about it. Drove us crazy. So it wouldn't have been good.
I get it, though. I get it. And you'll know why, especially if you, I don't, did he allow you to get any of the Epics games later on? Like, oh my God, those were murder on joysticks, and surprised if you could even look at those because they were murder. This wasn't too bad. Turrican wasn't too bad.
He was worried that the paddles, that we were going to ruin the paddles and that we were going to wreck the keyboards because those were your two main inputs. And so we barely played, or if I played games, is when he's out of town or something. It's like, oh, Dad's not here? Sweet. I'm going to play until my hands go numb. And who cares what happens? And I'll just explain it when he gets home if something breaks. Right. Nothing ever broke. It was all fine.
Yeah.
He was just cheap.
Now, Manfred Trenz, who is the guy who did this Turrican, started out on programming in BASIC. And then he learned assembly language. And he started making a lot of really cool games, mostly ripoffs, just like everybody was doing in the early 80s, of other games. And then he slowly started finding his own way, and I think that really culminated here into the Turrican series.
Turrican, in a lot of ways, you know, for people that had consoles, maybe an NES or something. Like I said, it'd been a year later though. What
Like, yeah, it wasn't too much longer. It came out for the 64 first, I believe, and then it was shortly thereafter went to, you know, the Apple.
Yeah, but when did Mega Man first hit? What year was it, the original Mega Man?
Mega Man!
Because in a lot of ways, Turrican is basically a Mega Man game in a lot of ways.
When was it? We just did Mega Man recently. It seemed like it was like later in the 80s than we thought.
Yeah, so maybe Turrican was ahead of everybody else instead of the opposite thing you usually think of, you know? Maybe it was Turrican first. Yeah,
it borrowed from other games like Gunstar Heroes and, you know,
Contra. Yeah, but Gunstar Heroes didn't happen until Genesis like 96 or something. Was it that late?
Yeah. Oh, wow, okay, then maybe I'm wrong. But anyway.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think Turrican should get more credit. I think maybe in a lot of ways it started it all, you know?
If you want to fight, man, let me tell you something about the Commodore 64 era. Everybody thinks that the Sega Genesis versus, you know, the Super Nintendo and all that stuff was the battle was all that. But early 80s, mid 80s, it was a lot of fighting about the Commodore 64 games, the Apple games, and specifically like, you know, stuff like you either love Turrican or you were not really into that. And they'll fight you.
Well, they'll fight. Fight you and cut you. Turrican is beloved. Now, I'd like to tell you fine folks about a game that sounds a little like this. Give it a sec. It gets going. Here we go.
Oh, I love it.
Now, if you don't know what this is, it's a little game called International Karate.
Yes, and this is not international. It's not IK Plus, even though that's what most people love the most. I played more of International Karate, so that's the reason why it made it on the list.
I remember it, and I remember it thinking, this is my friend's house. He had a C64, and I remember seeing this game and going, are you kidding me? This is amazing. Yeah. Like, what the crap? Look at these fighters. There's so much animation. They're kicking the shit out of each other. It also was like skill-based and not button-mashy, so you had to time your kicks and your punches and your blocks. And you jump around these different locations, have a tournament right out in front of the Statue of Liberty for some reason. The Twin Towers are back there still. You can see those.
Yeah.
But this like amazing tactical fighter, this was a huge hit for a lot of people. Yeah. And it was like, hey, Capcom in the arcades, F off. We got this.
I know. Now, they got a little bit of crap. They got accused of being a Karate Champ ripoff.
Yeah,
I could see it. But it was, you know, it was decided that, yeah, you don't own karate. You can't just, you know, the karate matches and, you know, giving points to karate, you know, you can't trademark that. You can trademark a name. You can trademark certain technologies, but you can't trademark a sport like that.
No, unless it was like straight up code ripoff. I don't think you can make the argument. Back then, though, this is Wild West. Nobody knew what to say about who copied what or who inspired what. You know, video games now, they use all kinds of mechanics and stuff from different games. And once in a while, you have a weird thing like the Shadow of Mordor game had that Nemesis system in it, and they copyrighted that or trademarked it. And that's why you don't see it anywhere, because it's in legal mush town trying to get your game made with something that's even remotely like it. People get away with it, but... You have to
I'm
be
surprised
careful.
They could do it. It's very generalized with the Nemesis system. Basically, what you're saying, it's an old story trope. I mean, there's a revenge. I mean,
I don't think you should be able to do it. I think it's like movies, like even with movie names, they don't let you do it. There's 15 movies called Traffic. Why? Yeah. Or Crash.
Yeah.
It's like, well, because if you copyrighted Crash, no one could ever use it again. You severely limit the creativity. I think video games have slowly gotten to the place where that's also still true. It's just that with code, because it's so it's permanent and kind of doesn't vary or degrade. It's code, so people feel like, well, no, we should copy or we should lock that down as if it's ours because it's code. But I think we're finally getting to the place where video games are just more fluid and, you know, systems in terms of gameplay, you know, they don't need to worry about that shit.
I think artistic, you know, there's mechanical parts of a program, and then there's artistic parts and artistic expression. And artistic expression is usually a reflection of culture, and it's in all of us. And so as long as you're not, like, directly copying a character specifically, then, you know, I think, you know, defining human nature, I mean, come on, you can't copyright that or how people play karate. And international karate, I love the crap out of it because it was the most satisfying game you could play. because there wasn't like, it wasn't like what we got from Mortal Kombat and games later on, where it's like, you got a bunch of punches, you know, and you gotta do all this other stuff. But instead, you would just land the perfect punch.
Yeah.
And I love land. It was so satisfying to flip over your opponent. And then once you figured out the timing, turn around and punch him in the back of the head. Yeah. And you'd get, you know, X number of points. And that was, it was just the most satisfying feeling. But I was really jealous because I had international karate, but my friend had an Apple II and he had Karateka.
Yeah, Karateka was the bomb, dude. That game rocked.
That was an amazing game. What's the developer's name? Did Prince of Persia?
Don't remember. But
oh my god, the animations on that thing.
Yeah.
The mood, I loved it. I even loved the momentum of it, because when you would walk and you would try to stop, it would like keep going for a minute or two, like so many seconds or whatever.
Sure.
And but it was so good. But I had international karate, and I'm like, suck it. Come over and play some arcading.
Jordan Mechner says the chat. Is that right? Jordan Mechner?
That's it. That sounds right. Jordan Mechner.
Real quick, there's. I was just listening to an interview about this. The Jordan Mechner legacy sort of continues on, because you had Karateka, then Prince of Persia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then eventually Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, and the kind of newer take on Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
And then you get the entire Assassin's Creed series is basically a spiritual successor to that. It's what it all came out of. So still to this day, those primordial bits are in modern games. And I love that. It's really
Mechner
great.
Needs his own episode. There's a couple of developers that I've been learning more and more about. We're going to talk about David Crane again a little bit. And I'm telling you, man, we may have to get to a point where we had to have a whole episode about just certain developers and how they changed everything.
Well, who made... What's the name of the damn game Brian loves so much? Dunaway. Hold on.
Ibbots? Me?
Ibbots. Tempest. Oh, he loves Tempest. The dude what made Tempest is like a lord in gaming circles. Can't think of his freaking name. Hold on.
Lord Featherbottom.
This isn't it.
Is it Jeff Minter?
No. Yes, Jeff Minter. We got to talk about that guy. We got to have a whole episode about Minter.
Hey, Wraith. Yes. We're going to do that. We're going to get to full. Maybe we should do some extra little smaller episodes where we talk about, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, the deeper I dig into retro, the more times I run across the same names over and over again. I'm like, darn, I thought I was just a fan of, you know, these particular games. I'm actually a fan of this particular developer, and I never really knew it.
Yeah. And by the way, I was wrong about the dev. It's Dave Thurier, but
Dave Thurier.
Minter did like stuff later, like 2000 he made and some other stuff. Anyway, yeah, we got to do that. We got to look at some of these rock stars of early gaming that got no credit while they rock were doing stars. It, though. At the time, they were like left off the box, got paid shit, made the whole game. It's just such a different world now. They're rock stars now, these game devs.
Yeah, they are. They're not all named Rockstar, but yeah, they're all, yeah, they're rock stars.
They're like rock stars who sometimes publish games at Rockstar. All right, check this out.
I really dug deep into System 3, by the way. I don't want to hold up too long on the international karate, but I really dug deep into System 3. They still exist. They did international karate. Their first gig that they did when they announced this is pretty interesting story. I'll have to talk about that sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love digging deeper into that early corporate-y business. All right, next game on our list is like a little game I played this week that I thought I was going to like because I just love the idea of it. And boy, howdy, is it hard to play. But it's called Impossible Mission from 1984, and it sounds like this.
Stay a while.
That's familiar, isn't it?
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, so that's the audio originally used by Rob Gobers when he made the theme for our now defunct game show, Final Score. I could never remember what the damn name is. Final Score, but we also used it on the Boop Show for the longest time. And I never knew the origin of that original clip until I played this game. So that was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Great speech synthesis. Yeah. Boy, that's a tough one for me to come up with.
I just love him doing this. Chip, this bit right here. That. It's great.
I love when he eternal falls. I don't know if you experienced any of his falls, but it's just like, ah!
Oh yeah, he falls for a lot. Shoot, I didn't record any though. I should have. That would have been great. But the game is basically a little spy dude, and you run into these. The map actually reminded me of a Metroidvania, weirdly. But you run into these office buildings and or these offices, and they have different floors, little elevators to get you places. You're kind of rotoscope animated. I shouldn't say kind of. You are rotoscope.
Yeah, he looks like, yeah, he's been, they studied, I don't actually think they rotoscoped it, believe it or not. I think they actually animated it based off real animation books.
Oh,
but
wow.
I don't know if they actually rotoscoped him or not, but it's,
that's impressive.
I love when he flips. The flipping is the absolute freaking
best. Oh, the flipping
best.
Is the best. Yeah, it's a little unrealistic in terms of how he lands and stuff. But you got to avoid these robots who are trying to zap you and kill you. And while they're busy trying to zap you and kill you, you need to try to occasionally grab a computer or a bookshelf or whatever it is and take the shit that's on it. And yeah. The search bar that you use, it retains how much you got done last time you tried. So if you had a really hard time doing it because a robot zapper came to get you, you can go back and, you know, avoid him for a minute and go back and it will pick up in the progress that you were before. I found this game effing hard to play, really hard, like just not hard difficulty, hard awkward, just blah, just felt like I was barely moving. It was weird. I didn't enjoy
this
it.
This is another one of those games where if you can play it for 15 minutes and become acclimated to the physics of it, it becomes more sensical and you start figuring stuff out. With this game has random, it loads up randomly. I like that. So you got, it's always a new fresh take every time you get killed enough times and you start over again.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, you got to search the different computers. What you're trying to do is you're trying to stop Elvin Atombender from blowing up the world. He's been, you know, he's been breaking into, hacking the computers. So you've hacked into his lair and you're trying to search through his stuff to get passwords and pieces of puzzles that you'll eventually have to put together, which is a pain in the butt. I don't know if you didn't make it that far. It's almost an impossible mission at that point. Then when you start getting to the puzzle solving part, that's when you realize, oh, this is an impossible mission.
Yeah. We're not glossing over the fact that they literally named it Impossible Mission instead of Mission Impossible.
Yeah. But, it's, oh, okay. Look, they're doing it here. I think that was just one of the puzzles.
It's a memory game, right?
Yeah, it's a memory game.
It's a match game or whatever. It's stupid.
You do. I do like I tried to think. I'm like, was this the first time I had experienced a game that had a interruptible event? So I actually had to, you know, it wasn't all action. You know, you had to jump around, jump over robots and stuff who were trying to zap you and kill you. You can't touch them. But when you get to the desk or anything, you got to stop and you got to search, and you got to avoid the robots, but here they come and you're trying to search at the same time. Mm-hmm. Those robots stop, but then they can also blast you. But, I was trying to think if that was the first time I experienced that game mechanic or not.
Well, it is. I don't know when the first time I played it was this week. So I feel like I can't say, but I've played lots of things since then, and looking at how old this is, I wouldn't be surprised. You know,
yeah.
The fact that it's also featured random levels, that was huge back then. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way that was, maybe not been in the first, but it was early.
It felt like a continuation of what we saw with Robotron, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you're still facing robots. You got a little randomization. Mm-hmm. I really liked it.
I respect it. I respect it. I don't know if I like it.
That's what I should say too. Mm-hmm. I respect it because I doubt I'll be going back to play it anytime soon. I don't know if there's any speed running involved with this one or not, but Impossible Mission, pretty interesting stuff. The best parts, though, you need to read the manual. You need to go back and read that because it goes deeper into it. Mostly goes into our bad guy,
mm-hmm.
Elvin Atombender, and it talks about why he's doing this.
Yep.
And it gets really interesting. So like one of the things one of the things that kicks him off is when he was younger, he became obsessed with a computer game called Giggling Penguin Invaders from Outer Space in the vicinity of Ursa Minor.
Yeah.
Elvin had always hated penguins from Ursa Minor. It's in the script, man. It's in the script.
Yep. I like that, though. Anyway, extended lore. These days you go to Wikipedia for this stuff. Back in the day, they put it in the manual. It's pretty cool.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But the game in that fictitious game, the game score counter went up to 100 billion and Elvin was determined to max it out.
Yeah.
After playing the game for several days without sleep, he had vaporized enough penguins to pile up 999,990,000 anyway, a lot of points.
Yep.
One more tuxedo avian and he'd have it. Elvin shook out his joystick hand, a 250-point penguin waddled onto the screen. Elvin's eyes lit up. He took aim. And something's, he just missed.
No!
And so then he lost his mind.
I would have lost my mind.
Yeah, that precise moment, the power failed. The power failed, man. And so he wasn't able to shoot that last penguin, so he lost his mind.
You know, how many of us haven't been there? You know what I mean?
Right.
We've all been there. All right.
Who hasn't?
It's a cool game. Next on our list is EA's attempt to rip off Nintendo. Yes, that's right. A very early Electronic Arts made a game.
The first EA game, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was the first. Was it the first? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was one of the first five, and I think it was the most successful, so they always call it the first.
Oh, interesting. Well, here's some sound. Oh, my Lord.
I'm dead.
Yeah, my ears are broken. Now, if you're hearing this and thinking, boy, it sounds like Donkey Kong. And if you saw it, if you're in the chat room and you're watching, you're like, oh, this looks a lot like Donkey Kong. That's because it is a lot like Donkey Kong, and they kind of stole the concept.
They aped this idea from Nintendo, right? I mean, it's not Donkey Kong in the fact that you're trying to rescue a princess.
Right.
Or whatever she is. It's not even a princess, right? It's Miss Pink Bottoms.
Miss Pink Bottoms. Yeah.
Yeah. Your hard hat Mac, and you're working on a construction site, and your opponets are essentially OSHA and slackers, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah.
OSHA and slackers.
You got to gird the girders.
That's about right. Some of the levels require you to collect things. Some of them require you to basically fasten metal beams. And all of them are very like, oh, here's a conveyor belt, and here's a lift, and here's a weird piece of machinery, and
right,
try not to die and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I thought was the coolest freaking thing. And I played this on my Apple, is where I played it, the Apple Tube, when I was a kid. But like Brian said, this was on the C64. It showed up in other places. This was never a big mainstream thing because, again, if you were going to put this, say, on a console, Nintendo would have sued you. Like,
they did many times. I was surprised that they did not. Were they working with EA or something at that point in time? I need to know the history of it because, okay, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, but it made sense. I understand the inspiration. They didn't just make a monkey here, but they did go, oh, you know what's kind of cool? That girder structure that was in Donkey Kong really wasn't necessary for Donkey Kong. But hey, wouldn't it be cool if there was a construction guy there? Which, I mean, at this point, we didn't know Mario was a plumber, right? We just thought he was a construction guy.
Yeah, we didn't know. We didn't know anything about him. He was called Jumpman. Didn't even have a name yet.
Yeah, Jumpman. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, they took a lot of inspiration, but I don't know if you could.
I even look at it now, and I get excited because this seemed like magic to me. I can't explain it. You know how some old games, you just remember them from your childhood, and something about them is just like, this represents such a important time for me to go to all the wow factor I was getting out of computers. I was like, what the frick? Really? Like, I got to connect my hat to this magnet thing that'll lift me up and take me. Like, it just seemed so complex and so awesome. I still think of this very
highly. It was starting to get into storytelling, right? I mean, you had everything working here. It wasn't about everything is moving. You know, you got, even though it's a very simple story, there's a story there. You feel like you're attached to the character. You actually feel like you're in the character's place, right? That's what video games eventually became. Instead of just a bunch of parlor games, it became, you know, something more like something you felt attached to.
Yeah. And I will say this as someone who just was in awe of this game in the day.
Right.
I don't like it as much now. I don't think it's as good. Well,
it's hard to listen to. And one of the reasons why, I know you probably heard a lot of these games we've been playing. This was not a first run on the Commodore 64. It was developed outside the 64, but it came pretty quick afterwards. Yeah. But it was developed not SID chip in mind. And so, yeah, it was delicious. But I tell you, I really love the hard hat Mac cover that it came in like a big old 5 1/4
let me see this here
disc folder thing that I showed you, and it's got all this great, you know, guys call this great writing about hard hat. Look, there was such an imagination gap for games during the early 80s that, you know, you couldn't, you didn't want to stick.
That's right. I forgot about this. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. You didn't want to stick your graphics on the front of the disc because you would realize you're playing some 8-bit computers instead of this fantastic thing they were selling you, which was, you know, illustrations and photographs and all this other cool stuff that looked really neat.
Yeah.
But the packaging from that time always makes me laugh.
It's a crack up.
Mac was a good one.
Yeah, here it is. So the front of it's got like an actual photo of a dude, you know, wrestling with a girder, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the back, you've got, you know, Mac, the Vandals, and OSHA, which is.
Yeah. OSHA?
Yeah. They spell it OSHA, OSHA, but come on.
Yeah.
We know what that is.
It's OSHA. It's OSHA. And it is great. They got a lawsuit brought against them.
They did? By who, yeah, the government or something or what?
And Hard Hack Mac OSHA runs around the game screen, clipboard in hand, trying to squash Mac. And so a California state senator, Dan McCornadale, something like that, McCornadale, took offense to Electronic Arts' comic portrayal of OSHA as a video villain and dashed off a letter of complaint. And it was anti-worker, he says, and it gave the children playing the video games the wrong idea about their friendly federal government. 6 days later, the store pulled the video game.
Yeah, pulled the video game. That was it. Those are the days. By the way, I just wanted to point you out to the actual developer name who worked on this. Those guys that you mentioned.
Yes.
Areola Soft.
Areola Soft, baby.
Areola Soft. Yeah. That's great. Nice job.
That whole cover is a little bit cheeky. I think they also they talk about Hard Hat Mac being, you know, working hard and drinking a beer and that kind of stuff. I'm like, okay, I guess so. Early EA.
Yep.
Early do what you EA. Want, baby.
Yeah. EA early access. EA. No, not really. That's nothing to do with them. All right. No, let's play.
Electronic. Well, it wasn't even Electronic Arts. It was Electronic Art. To engineers,
what? Archineers or some bullshit. Yeah,
I forget. It was still like artisans or something. Everyone
had like terrible long names back then, and then they fixed them. Check this out. If you remember this, play some actual music here or some gameplay.
That's the ocean.
Yeah, there's some ocean. Let's see if we hear some skating. Yep, here's some skating.
Yeah, you were playing Hacky Sack before, by the way. There was a seagull that showed up.
Let's see, what's this one? Oh, this is the skating one. This game's full of all kinds of sounds. All right, so the game is freaking California Games in 1987. This was a big deal. It had half pipes, roller skating, surfing, BMX, footbag, they called it. Footbag.
Hacky sack. Come on. We all called it hacky sack.
Yeah. I think they call it footbag because maybe hacky sack is a brand. I don't actually know. I assume
that's
so.
That's why I figured too, because they also didn't call certain things in other games by their brand. Like they have flying disc instead of frisbee.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that hacky was a name, but I don't remember. It's been a while since I've done that. But the flying disc was offensively included and roller skating to attract the lady gamers.
Yeah, because that's the one thing we need to do is make sure we attract those lady gamers.
That's what all the stuff I've read about said. That's what they were thinking. It's great that we were make sure that we didn't like cut out part of your possible sales. But the fact that they felt like those were two of the feminine sports. I knew plenty of girls that played hacky sack and skated and surfed and everything else. I don't know why they felt like
they just need to apply. They need to appeal to girls who play video games just like everyone else does. So make it appeal to gamers because girls are gamers, assholes.
Yeah. Anyway, gamers.
Look at this guy. Look at him kicking that ball bag or whatever they call it. What's it called? It's on that ball bag.
Yes. It's his ball bag. We always call it hacky sacks. They call it foot bag here, which I think is probably the
general term
for it.
Brand.
This is the reason why I played this more than anything. I loved playing the footbag and the half pipe were my two favorites. I didn't really care about many of the other games, but the footbag was a lot of fun. You just basically slowly move around, kick the bag with your foot and then, or hit it with your head. And then you can turn around and get some points. You can do these little cross kicks and stuff. I always picked Ocean Pacific. I noticed whoever played this went with their Ocean Pacific as their team. Mm. You could early in the game, you could pick You could pick a sponsor, I suppose. You also could pick two players.
No, that's true.
This is one of the few two-player games I had back in the day, and it was a lot of fun.
Meant you had to have two $80 controllers at the time, but yeah.
Right. We took turns. I think some of you took turns and some of you play at the same time.
This may have been the Apple IIe, but the Apple IIe had two ports, two serial ports, and you could do
two
controllers. And I remember there was no way my dad was ever going to do it. He wouldn't barely let us touch the one. He's like, I'm not letting you tell you. You're going to break them, boy.
How can we get a second one? What am I made out of money?
That's right. Real quick, I checked on the Hacky Sack name. It is a brand of football popular in the 1970s, currently owned by Wham-O, which has since become a generic trademark, so you can use it now.
Oh.
But back then, good. You couldn't. Not in the 80s. It was a brand.
Yeah, you couldn't use it. So, but you did have like brand supported stuff like Opie and that kind of stuff. So that's Ocean Pacific. That's kind
of
cool.
One of these, they almost called it Dirt Bag. That's awesome.
Dirt Bag. Yep. It is kind of Dirt Bag. You're always dropping it and it gets dirt all over it.
It's dirt baggy. I have to say, I think the surfing was fun. I enjoyed that.
Well, the surfing was a lot of fun. Yeah. I liked California Games because it wasn't as joystick wrecking as some of the other games like Summer Games and Winter Games.
Yeah.
Especially Summer Games. Did you ever do cycling in Summer Games?
Well, yeah, Summer Games will kill you. It's like playing...
Your dad would lose his shit.
Like track and field.
Because it's all about doing the circle motion with your controller. And I don't know what kind of controller you had. A lot of controllers at that time had like little suction cups.
Show that one up on screen for those who can't see it here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the one that comes with the Mini, right? That's what they have.
Yeah, this is one that comes with the Mini, and it's similar to the one that you could get for the Commodore. But I had another one too. It was like a ugly red stripe thing that was like palm. You gripped it with your palm, and the stick was a lot smaller. I can't remember who made it.
Do you have paddles as well for like paddle games?
I never did paddles very much. I did have paddles for the Atari 2600, but I don't think I ever used paddles once I got to the Commodore 64. I can't think of any paddle games I played.
We had paddles and joysticks, and we don't know why my dad bought them. Either way.
Yeah, probably the same reason. It's like probably because, you know, when you had the Atari and stuff, the early stuff did have paddles. A lot of arcade games and a lot of early games was the spinner controls and stuff that you would use for Centipede and different games that would require the spinning. But yeah, I don't know. That might have been pretty cool though, because you could have done. I do remember playing some tennis games and things with that. I don't remember playing on the Commodore 64, but it might have been good for some of these Epix games. By the way, those names, Epix, EA meant nothing to me at that point in time. It was later in the like the 90s that I really started getting into Electronic Arts, the late 80s.
No one cared then.
But that was really about the Epix games. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so big into those games, all those sports games that
they did amazing stuff. I agree. Speaking of which, they, like you mentioned earlier, they did one called Winter Games. Since they couldn't use music like Olympic music, official Olympic music from the 84 Olympics or any other time around then. Yeah. They used the Canadian anthem for when he lit the torch. I think that's amazing. But you could choose your country and you could hear different anthems and stuff. But for some reason, the torch lighting, which was universal, was always the Canadian national anthem.
Yeah, I never understood that, but I dig it. I like the Winter Games. So of course, Summer Games was first.
Yeah,
and I remember playing a good bit of that. But then, like I said, I kind of went over to California Games. Summer Games, like I said, the cycling thing, I can't even tell you how many times I've
it was the worst
controllers.
It was the worst. That game wanted to be what's Nintendo's Excite Bike. It wanted to be that.
Oh, Excite Bike. Yeah,
but it wasn't as good as that. Unfortunately,
yeah.
It's not my favorite.
Originally, I was digging through the history of some of these things. I did like the fact that the first Summer Games, which is the first one that was released in 1984. It was prototyping. It was called Sweat.
Yeah,
and Sweat. It had a lot of the things to it too. Yeah, I'm surprised that they thought they were going to sell a game called Sweat. I just didn't see that. I mean,
Sweat. Can you imagine?
When was Jane Fonda dancing to the oldies, or was that the other guy? Who
she's doing that? She's doing that now. Oldies? I think she's still doing it. No, she. Right, you're right. She was doing. Well, she was doing the Jane Fonda workout in the 80s, but so yeah. was Richard, not Richard Nixon, Simmons? Richard Simmons.
No, is it Richard Simmons?
Yeah, Simmons was also doing
it. Was dancing to the oldies.
He was dancing to the fatties, or what was the name of it? It's not dancing to the fatties. What is it? Maybe it is dancing to the oldies. I don't know.
I know what it was called, dancing with the oldies.
I don't remember. That one. But that I'm was the thing. Sure.
Sweating to the oldies, Sonda says. That was it. Sweating to the oldies.
It was sweating with an N and an apostrophe, I think.
There you go. I guess sweating was the thing. That's the reason why I said sweat. And then I said sweating to the oldies. Ah,
yeah, whatever. Right. Sweating to the fatties. That's the one I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it was good. This is the one I liked the most. I liked the Winter Games. For whatever reason, I found the events more fun. I thought this was a cool game. It also just seemed graphically like way more stuff.
Yeah. Well, on. I mean, look where you live. I mean, you probably like the winter stuff.
I do
didn't have winter over here.
Hell, so we had the Olympics stuff. Here once and actually made money, which no one does. It's just crazy.
Oh, nice. Yeah. 1984. That was when we were doing the Olympics. And so Epics made a good little bit of money from all that.
Yeah, that's right. LA Olympics in 84. And then when was the 88s were, who was that? Japan, Nagano, I think. Japan.
I think you're right.
Forget. Anyway, so there's that. Now let's talk about the weirdest one on here. Not the weirdest. It's pretty weird, though. But also, in some ways, this thing was breaking ground. And
yeah.
We'll talk about it. So here's some sound of that. As you can tell, licensing music was a pain. So what did they do? They just used free classical music in games back then.
That's what you do.
Here's some typing. Here he is on a piano. You're saying to yourselves, what's this game? Well, it's a little game called Little Computer People.
Yes.
1985.
And people who know
really
know. And people who never heard of it are like, what?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's, I got to say, I absolutely love the character design in this game. It is the goofiest, dumbest looking characters in a great way. Like, I actually really think they pulled off something here with like simple graphics and animation. Yeah. That I don't see in other games. First of all, there's more frames of animation going on with that. Look at that dog and that guy. Look at that. They're adorable.
Isn't that, if you haven't seen Little Computer People, oh my God, it was called House on a Disc because essentially the idea was that on a disc of 5 1/4 or 5 1/2, you would stick that into your ROM there, to your CD. No, what am I thinking of? Your disc.
Your disc hole.
I was trying to read at the same time. So anyway, House on a Disc. The idea was there was a little person inside everybody's computer, and it would be randomly generated. So everybody got a different little character. I think it was per disc. I don't know if there was some kind of random seed or something, but anyway, that's what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And you basically take care of this little guy by feeding him, and it runs on a real time clock. So you set the clock right away when you start the game. And
I think they stole
his little house.
I think they stole Sims. And from this,
this is definitely like one of the first, you know, people simulations
for sure
that I'd ever seen. You do these little commands. The prompt command is to ask him please. So you can ask your character to please write you a letter, and if he's in a good mood, he will go to his computer. He'll type you out a little letter, and you can feed him. You can feed the dog, and I don't think anybody dies.
No deaths.
So you just can, you can do stuff.
You can type.
It looks like you can do book.
Yeah, you can type book. He'll take a book. He'll sit down and he'll read his book. You can say eat and he'll go eat, which you need to do because he'll get too hungry if you don't. I don't think he dies, but you know, it's like that. If you want him to take a bath, I'm pretty sure you can type bath and he'll take a bath. So it's just this like living world in a disc, which must have been mind-blowing at the time. Didn't play this, but this must have just blown people's minds. Like, oh my gosh, can you believe what we're doing with games?
You would start in the morning time before you go to school, and you could just let this thing run all day, and you would just walk around your computer. You'd dead have a stroke, turn this off. You're trying to run the power bill up.
Yep.
You're using up the CPU cycles.
Yep. That's what your dad would say. My dad would definitely say that 100%. That would be the words out of his mouth. It's like Tamagotchi, but you know, on a disc, and a computer had to run it, kind of.
Yeah, computer had to run it. It would just, you know, load in memory, and it just run all day. And you'd come home, and he'd be watching some TV. Maybe he's getting hungry, but he answers the phone. Oh my God, when he answers the phone, he's so annoying because he's got that. Oh, you know, we like the Sims mumbles. those all are pretty okay and to the ear.
Simlish,
but man,
yeah, Simlish,
yeah, the not here though. This guy, he gets on the phone and it's like, oh my god, it's the worst. But I also love it too.
I also love it as well. I just think the character design is great. I'd love to see a modern take on this with that. Just let you know, even a mobile game or something where you just make all these ideas modern, but also just barely update the design. You don't need to do much. I actually think this stuff is great, folks. At home, you can't tell him to go rub his nub in the tub. Okay, you can't do that.
Rub his nub in the tub.
Yeah, or stare out a window. Three men in a tub rubbing their nub.
Right, it's no good. But do you know why this looks so cute? You know why it looks so good?
Why?
David Crane. Pitfall. David Crane.
He did it.
Let me tell you about a man who can take an 8-bit computer or console and just make something that is just fantastic. I mean, his style for characters.
Oh yeah,
is just characters and scale just freaking amazing.
Now he is amazing. And there's no doubt about it. We got to do a whole thing on that guy. Whole retrospective.
We got to, because there's one last game. I don't know if we're gonna have a chance to talk about it or not. You're gonna talk about it.
I am. But before we do that, I wanted you to hear this sound. I forgot to play in Winter Games. It's the sound of you flying off on a ski jump, and we think it's great. We played a pre-show, but here it is. Every sound there makes sense. So I'll do it in parts. Here we go. Yeah. Wait. Whoops. Sorry. Okay, sliding off, jumping and spinning. The little whee, very cartoony, but it's, you understand. Then you get on the back end this sound. That makes sense. You've landed in the snow. What the F is this? What the F is that?
Is that the braking?
He farted or something. Don't know what he did.
I guess you'd fart too. I don't know.
I would fart. If I was that high up
in the air. I don't know how to. Yeah.
Don't stop me from farting. I'm going to do it.
I mean, you want to hold in your farts because that'll make you the lightest, right?
That's right.
Now, and then once you land, it's like, well, I got to get rid of this.
Now, this is important stuff. This game I remember at my friend's house. I was so jealous. I don't think they had it on my Apple IIe. I don't think.
No, everybody had it, though.
Yeah. Everyone had this. Here it is. Check it out. Game. Ghostbusters! What the frick, dude? The it's laugh. Why is it even in there? Why is that laugh in there? Like, what is the point? Anyway, listen to this music. This is great.
That is awesome.
It is great. So there you go. Here's some gameplay. It's just running around catching ghosts. Oh, I should play some. Hold up. Yeah. And look, you start out in the car. Yeah, you start in the car.
David Crane.
Look at this out here. Oh, is this more David Crane business?
Yeah, this is more David Crane business. Every time I hit something, I was like, holy crap, David Crane did that too?
He's a C64 genius, this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine getting to make a game about this incredibly popular, eternally, wonderfully thought of movie, Ghostbusters. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. What a cool thing.
It is awesome.
But you drive in your car, you go to different jobs, you catch ghosts in those jobs, they give you points and you earn money.
They didn't just give you points.
You
started out with, you got to buy stuff and you have a bank.
Yep.
And that was the cool thing about this game. It was kind of unheard of. You started out with bank and you could save with passwords that would keep track of your bank amount, because you needed that bank because you're operating a business. You're operating in Ghostbusters business.
Yep.
And it takes some money.
It takes money to be a Ghostbuster. That's true.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay the rent on your previously a firehouse, you know?
No. Zool? No. Zool? He's not going to pay for it.
Exactly.
No.
One thing I wanted to mention, this is another Activision joint. As you can see, chat room at the bottom, their freaking fat logo out where everybody can see it.
That's right. David Crane and Activision, baby, bringing another hit to your computer.
Bringing a hit. Now, I'll always cherish this. Ghostbusters! I'm never letting that go.
I love that it's so maniacal.
It's so good. Yep, it wins the X-Chicken Award.
X-Chicken!
Yeah. I think we should have a voice award on this show for the best. It'll be called the X-Chicken. And it's whenever there's voice work that's just insanely great. I think this week we have two good ones like this. And this. Ghostbusters! Yeah, I love it. That's so bad.
Anyway. It is so good. God, I'm so glad we did the Commodore 64, because it has such great sound, man. I have forgotten how fantastic Yep. Commodore 64.
It is a great device. The minis are awesome. I have Brian to thank for sending me one of his. I don't know. Yes. How'd you end up with two? I don't remember what the deal was. Why'd you have two?
I was sending an extra one.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So I ended up with this extra one, and I really like it. They're fun to emulate as well. If you, I've been doing it on the Steam Deck. That's where I played all these.
Yes.
I didn't play them on the Mini. I should have. That's what you did, right?
I did a little bit of the Mini.
Because not all these games are on there, I don't think. Like Hard Hat Max,
most of the games are not on it. There's 64 games, and it's none of these, I think, except for Impossible Mission. Turrican definitely was not on there, but or maybe it is. Anyway, you can load those up from a USB drive. It's real easy. You don't have to hack it or anything. So, but that was pretty cool. But I decided I wanted to get a little better experience. So I loaded it up on my Mr. FPGA, and I played most of them there, and it was quite the good experience, I got to say. But I did learn something. Yeah. All these emulators, I forgot that a lot of times you would put your controller in port 2 on the Commodore.
That's true.
A lot of times I would go to play something, I'm like, it's not working. It's because I needed to swap joysticks. So if you're doing an emulation out there, and you can't get it to function correctly with the joystick, you probably need to swap the joystick. Just a little tip.
If you're having trouble.
Emulators out there.
There you go. Yep. Nailed it. Yeah. Excellent. And a lot of that stuff's on archive.org, by the way, if you're looking for ROMs.
Tons of it is, because there's over 10,000 games that were developed for the Commodore 64. You better bet a lot of those things are abandonware or just donated to the community of wonderful users. Yeah.
99.9% garbage, by the way. A lot of it's bad.
Yeah.
But
that's because we've done a lot of console stuff that has its own licensing things. Yeah. This is developing for a computer, and there's no licensing there. You just develop for the computer and you freaking sell it, and you know, this is how you do it, man.
Yeah, like Brian says, there's no licensing. Okay.
There's not no licensing, man. And everybody had a point of entry. The Commodore 64 was designed for the masses and not the classes. So anybody could program a game in BASIC. Wouldn't be the best, but you could. And a lot of my gaming was done thanks to a lot of great game developers out there submitting their games to magazines.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of coding, transcoding over... code to play games.
That's awesome. My friend made games on his I made some on my Apple II. I made an adventure game that no one will ever see. It was fun. Programming in BASIC was fun.
The thing is, there was so much of it. There's a lot of trash out there, but there's a lot of great stuff as well, and it's actually, people are still, even in 2022, are making Commodore 64 games with the many things we've learned about game mechanics, still using that original hardware and making some pretty neat games.
Yeah, I need to check more of that homebrew stuff because I love that. Big fan.
Yeah. And there is a huge number of people who are fans of the SID chip style music, and people are still making music with it.
Yeah, I got to look some of that up too. I should have prepped some of that for
the show. There's a huge scene out there for all this stuff.
All right. Well, that is all well and good, but today we have to test our memories and guess our game.
Destroy it.
We play a little audio to each other, and we try to guess what game we picked. I'm going to start this week, and I will tell you a couple of hints that'll help. The year was 1994, Brian.
No, 1994.
The consoles were the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, the Genesis from Sega, and the Sega CD.
Oh, it made it to the CD. It must have some good music, because we got the SNES with one of the best sound chips out there at the time.
Yeah.
Genesis was crap, but the Sega CD might have helped it.
It might have, but I only got audio for the SNES version, which is the version I played. So anyway, it might be obvious. So I'm going to play it, and we'll see if you can figure it out. Enjoy.
What? Excellent.
Awesome. Legendary.
Legendary. You're definitely pulling some kind of moves.
He's a red, he's a red, he's my real cool radical Rick. Radical Rick. He's a red, he's a red, he's my real cool radical Rick. Radical Rick. He's a red, he's a red, he's my real cool radical Rick. He's my real cool radical Rick.
Right. Is it Radical Rex?
100%. It is Radical Rex. I told you to give it away. They literally sing it.
Yeah, the guy literally says it like 12 times.
I was hoping
radical,
you wouldn't
radical,
get it.
Radical Rex.
It's so bad. It's one of those 90s things where they just thought the word radical needed to be everywhere. It was just stupid.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. That is awesome. I haven't thought about that for like, what year was it? 1993? Yeah,
94, I believe. 94?
94, yeah.
And this was, it did okay. It was a fun little side-scrolling, pretty well-animated platformer thing. And you were this cool, radical little dinosaur guy who occasionally would get a skateboard and do like Sonic-style moves and then be real fast on screen. And then other times you were just jumping and hopping and kind of being normal. This is all right. This is an okay game for what it was at the time.
Like, you called him a cool dinosaur when obviously his name is Radical Rex.
Yeah, it's Radical Rex.
He's obviously radical.
There's the T-Rex, there's the Radical Rex, and then the Carnosaur. Those are the three dinosaurs.
Oh my god, I thought about that in like about as long as I haven't thought about the game that you're supposed to guess from me.
Yeah, it's an old poopy one, but fun. It's okay. It's an okay game. I just think that the adherence to like radical man is just a little much. It's a little much. All right, Brian, I'm going to play yours.
I love games that embraced that because now they have a place in history.
Yeah,
that even if it's stupid, I can still kind of go, hey, remember when radical was a cool word?
Yeah, that's true. Right. But no one does it now. I say rad all the time, and it's not the same.
Yeah. No, it's not the same.
All right, let's guess yours. Give me your year and your whatnot here. What do I got in front of me?
It originally released in 1993 for the SNES, and then the following year, we got it on the Sega Genesis in 1994. Mm. Let's see. How about this? It's a parody game.
Oh, shit. Okay, I have no idea what this is. Let me hit play. We'll see what we get. Shoplifter. Just kidding.
Nailed it.
Okay. Oh my gosh, it could be anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, here are the combatants for this extravaganza. Blue Suede Goo versus Helga.
Oh, mama.
Okay, Blue Suede Goo versus Zelda?
Helga.
Mama.
Am I hearing Elvis?
Hey, wash your hair, man.
Hey, wash your hair, man. Uh-huh. I love
it. Obviously a fighting game.
What would this have been, though?
Uh-huh. Hey, wash your hair, man.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
Parody game, 1983, Sega Genesis. I think I played this on the SNES, I want to say.
It's the one
that's...
It's
a parody of Street Fighter. Does that tell you anything?
No, but I... were they... Was it the... When everything looked like clay? What was that called?
Yes. That's a good question. They like clay.
What was
and it was a parody
called?
Of Street Fighters. Street Fighter? Yes.
Why are you saying it? Oh, Clay Fighter.
Clay Fighter. All right. I knew that.
Clay Fighter.
Yeah, Clay Fighter had all kinds of stuff in there. Elvis looking dude and all that.
Elvis and Helga. She was a Viking lass.
Yeah, Viking so lass, a young Viking lass. Yeah. Oh, chat room had it a bunch. Look at all you guys with your Clay Fighter.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. They did.
Yeah, nicely done. I think Tondragosa got your first, pull there. I knew I'd get to it. I could not remember the two words being together. Clay Fighter.
Clay Fighter.
It was some kind of fighter with clay in it. I don't know. What would that name be? All right. Well done. That was fun. Now this.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
It's time for your emails. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is the email address to use. We got one here from Mike.
Normally
you put your thing in the, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, I love it. It's kind of like when I worked at Blockbuster and they used to say, I'm looking for that movie. Two thumbs up.
No. You got two thumbs up? That'd be great.
Good two thumbs up. And that's the review, dummy.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so this is Mike from Warwick, UK. And he says, Warwick. Hi, Scott and Brian. Firstly, absolutely love the show. I found it fascinating learning of some of the retro gaming and reliving my own retro favorites. He spells favorites with a U, which means he is definitely British.
Definitely UK.
100%. Says, I took Scott's advice from last week's show and purchased Horizon Chase Turbo on the Switch. And it also happened to be on sale. It was actually was good timing because it did go on sale. It immediately reminded me of the game I ever bought for my first NES, or bought first for my NES, which was Top Gear. I recently played Top Gear, funny enough. Because Brian and I's next episode might have a little Anyway, the more I played it, the more it reminded me of racing games from the Super Nintendo. Then playing the Chili campaign, I heard the soundtrack, which sounded exactly like the music in Top Gear. Would be interesting to know if the developers of this had anything to do with the Top Gear series. It would be interesting to know your thoughts and how similar they were. Many thanks, Mike. Well, Mike, I know for a fact the devs of that game, which just had its 7th year anniversary. So it's becoming kind of retro in its own way. Sure doesn't look like it, though. It looks like it just got made. They have stated many, many times that their inspirations were things like Outrun, Top Gear, and a ton of other titles. So that's what they're trying to do here. So you're not wrong to feel that inspiration. I don't think any of them had anything directly to do with those games, but they're definitely inspired by it. The other thing I wanted to say about it is this game that we're talking about here on the Switch, PC, Xbox, PlayStation, phone, it's everywhere. It's called Horizon Chase Turbo. And for their 7-year anniversary, they added a whole new mode to the thing, which is like a whole ton of extra content. So this is a great time to get it. And I think it's still on sale everywhere for like $5 or something dumb.
Yeah.
Y'all should get it. It's great. It's great.
If you like retro racers like that, I mean, this has got the spirit.
And this thing plays so good on the freaking Steam Deck. I can't say enough about that as a Steam Deck game. It's so good on there. Anyway, so if you want some retro with some new coat of paint, look no further than Horizon Chase Turbo. Okay.
Do it.
PlayRetroShow @gmail.com is that email.
Thank you, many thanks.
Yes, thank you, many thanks. Whoops. Thanks, many thanks. You're the manyest thanks we've ever had on the show.
Mike.
We appreciate it, Mike. Our next discussion will be arcade racing, Outrun, Ridge Racer, Daytona, Sega Rally, Rush. California Rush, baby. Ooh. All those games. Remember all those? We do too, and we love them. So we're going to talk about them. Maybe we'll veer into the console ports and stuff a little bit.
You get a steer into the conversation.
I see what you did. Ridge Racer 4 for the PS1, hell of a game. It's based on the arcade game, and it's great too. If you want to, was it Ridge Racer 4? Yeah, Ridge Racer 4, R4 was on the console. I don't remember now, but I remember thinking, thinking, man, this is like direct, like arcade port. This is so good. It's just like it is in the arcade. Anyway, we're going to talk about those racing games.
R4 is definitely, I think it's actually on our PlayStation Minis. And that's a good time for us to give away this PlayStation next week.
Oh, let's do it.
PlayStation Mini.
Let's do it. Yeah. How should we? We got to think about this. You know what it is? Here's what we'll do. You want a PlayStation Mini? Good. We got one for you. How do you enter? You're a patron. Everybody on Patreon can order. Now, the reason I'm saying this is you've got a mini to give away there, right?
Right.
I have a mini to give away here.
So, oh, look at this.
I know. So we're going to have two minis to give away. First, we'll do yours, and that will be a Patreon contest. Okay. The one after that, general public.
All right.
So one mini to the patrons, one mini to the public. Bim, bam, boom. Bob's your uncle. All right?
Who's Bob?
He's my uncle. I did have an Uncle Bob, actually. Oh. Yeah. People always said, Bob's your uncle. I'm like, I know.
I know.
I'm aware of it.
I know. He has no arms and legs. And when he goes into the lake, his name is Bob.
The nice thing about doing it on Patreon is it's obviously a more limited group of people. Therefore, they have a higher chance of winning. And we'll definitely give somebody one there. And then the other
plus
one will open
an easy
it up
contest.
Yeah, it's an easy contest. We just go pick one of you. How about that? Right. The other one, we'll launch it next week, and we'll tell you the rules when we do. So watch for that. It's Ridge Racer, Daytona USA, Sega Rally, Rush, and most importantly, I think Outrun. All of these will be on discussion next week. If you were looking for pole position, look somewhere else. That game is old and hard to play, and I don't like it. Okay?
It is very hard to play. Not saying we won't eventually get to a pole position, only if we're going to cover the cartoon as well.
Oh, we have to, dude. That cartoon.
Yeah, so that's good stuff.
Good and bad. Anyway, that'll be next week right here on the show. In the meantime, we get patrons sign up all the time. And one of them this week, well, three of them actually, Seb, Oolong Brothers and Sensei.
Oolong.
Yeah,
Sensei all now qualify up. For yep. this PlayStation Mini.
Yep, they're all qualified now. Will you be? Well, if you go sign up today, you can be. Patreon.com/playretro. That's Patreon.com/playretro. You'll never get a commercial. Pre-show content every week. Monthly benefits you only get by signing up. No reason not to. Patreon.com/playretro.
We're retro.
PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is our email address. Send us your feedback. We'd love it. PlayRetroShow on Twitter. And for everything else, it's at frogpants.com/playretro. That's going to do it for us. Hey, Brian, anything else you'd like to say before we go?
Stay a while.
Stay a while. And listen.
Forever.
No, and oh, sorry. We're not doing... what's his beak? Okay, we're not doing... It's nothing to do with Deckard Cain, okay? He had nothing to do with that intro. All right, that's it. Thank you all. Go play something retro. We'll see you next week.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.